From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Reginald Hardwick, News and Public Affairs Director at Illinois Public Media. Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 7 p.m., we're bringing you interviews and stories connected to Black communities in Central Illinois. This week, we're talking about the Black Chorus, sharing your memories of Dr. William Patterson. I'll take you to Cairo for the total eclipse, and at the end, I'll have a special announcement to make. But first, my conversation with Dr. Michael Roberts, the billionaire entrepreneur from St. Louis, recently visited Douglas Community Center in Champaign and the Spurlock Museum in Urbana as part of the Black Joy Project. He's encouraging us to dream bigger and says that's what he had to do to start and sustain many businesses.
I'm Dr. Michael Victor Roberts. You can call me Mike Roberts if you like. It doesn't matter to me because I've been called other names, some of which aren't very nice. But generally speaking, no, I'm perceived as the serial entrepreneur. I've built over 100 companies. I've employed over 11,000 individuals. 99% were African American. I've owned 12 hotels. Interestingly enough, in the time that I've owned hotels to find my management, they're those who said, you can't find Blacks to manage. And interestingly enough, my hotels were all managed by Black individuals, and most were female. I've also owned a dozen full-power television stations across the country. I've taken three companies public. I built a wireless phone company, the only African-American to actually build a phone company, and then took it public and ultimately sold it to Sprint. I built that throughout the entire state of Missouri and southern Illinois, interestingly enough. I then took on the aggressive move and the risky move to some degree of entering the FCC's auction. I won licenses to build what we now know as cellular phones, digital phones, and building that perspective allowed me to develop a number of companies and become quite successful as an entrepreneur.
I asked Roberts if he saw a life of owning businesses ahead of him while growing up in St. Louis.
What I recognized as a child growing up was that there was an unusual amount of changes taking place because there was still segregation in some areas. I remember even in the neighborhood that my parents moved me in when I was 10. It was a street that was built with beautiful new ranch homes, 14 homes, in North St. Louis. But interestingly enough, at the time, those homes were only sold to Black folks, and all the neighborhood around us were white. And as I would ride my bike around, I noticed that suddenly there were for sale signs popping up like dandelion weeds in the neighborhood around me. And it was not until later that I realized that that was the true definition of blockbusting, where after building homes that were much nicer, more beautiful, the ranch homes, than the homes that the whites were living in around me, the pressure that was placed upon those individuals by saying, if you don't sell now, your value is going to go down because there are Black people in the neighborhood and they're coming this way, that people panicked and they left and they sold cheap. And then as Black families moved in, those blockbusting individuals who were actually doing that gained great profits because they would sell them then to Black folks moving north into nicer neighborhoods. And ultimately, we saw that the whole neighborhood shifted because the way in which the systems were being structured was they were pushing African Americans into North City and away from South City in St. Louis. So now I'm referring to the 60s, late 50s and throughout the 60s at that point that I personally witnessed that. And, you know, it's looking back in history, you can see exactly how systematic discrimination was taking place. And that systematic discrimination existed not just in housing, but in corporate America, and pretty much every walk of existence that was out here. In college, I had to work myself through school. I worked in the kitchen, and it was Lindenwood at this time was an all-white school, mainly for very affluent white girls from the South. And when I went there as a junior, they opened up to be Lindenwood College for Men. So it was the same school, but functionally different. We ate at the same cafeteria and so on and so forth. The point is, I went from just being a guy who worked there watching all the wealthy girls out there eat, and then I'm cleaning up, to heading the cafeteria workforce. And that's kind of a little bit of a flavor of becoming your own management inside of your own space, because if the place, for example, wasn't clean for the next morning, it was on you. So it's like running a business, really. You know, I went on to college, through college, on to law school, and even during the time I was in school, I found myself selling dashikis to the bookstores at the school. Back when it was just becoming, you know, Black Power, I had a big afro at the time. And we were just beginning to better define ourselves as African Americans, from being Negroes, our people defined as colored, to the proud symbols of what James Brown would say, "Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud."
He credits his entrepreneurial spirit to his first role models, his parents.
So as a little small child, I noticed that my parents would create food products at home, and really what they were doing was they had a catering company for wealthy white folks in St. Louis, and they would prepare food, and I had real, at the time I was a little boy, so I had tiny hands, so I could make the hamburger balls that was needed, that was being fed to the people. And I remember making them, creating them, throw them in the skillet as a child. And my dad was, I guess, would work as the bartender at these private home events. Now, they weren't real happy about stating that they basically did this sort of work, even though it brought extra money and it brought wonderful food to the household. They always liked to low-key that, but I saw it ultimately, as I reflect back, as being business people, entrepreneurs, that in order for you to be able to make additional independent money, you know, you would have to be a person with a resourcefulness about you, and then you proceed.
Roberts told me the key to having so much ambition.
Well, I think what I try to express to people is for you to be successful, you have to eliminate the fear of failure, which I have eliminated. And I think if we break that down into two words, first word, fear. Fear is just a mental construct. It's not of nature, it's not grass growing or rain falling. When you were born perfect. You had no fear. So the fear that you have is self-imposed. Second word, failure. I submit to you there's no such thing as failure, because every experience that you have, you learn from it. Now, there may be a divorce in your world. There may be a business that didn't make it. But is it a failure or is it a lesson that you can gain from so that you won't necessarily repeat it? You know, we all have dreams. But what's the first thing you have to do if you have a dream? You have to wake up. And what will happen from time to time is family members will say, "Oh, you don't need to go into that business for yourself. You remember Uncle Tyrone tried it, and we know what happened there." Well, that's him. So sometimes you have to, from your dream, wake up, sit up, stand up. And frankly, you may have to tell your family members just to shut up and get out of your way.
There are more than 114,000 black businesses in Illinois. As we've talked about in earlier episodes of Dialogue, many of those businesses only have one employee and lack resources to grow. I asked Roberts what is his suggestion for scaling larger.
Yeah, my advice would be diversify. Don't necessarily, as the old folks said, put all your eggs in one basket, so to speak. I've probably set up over 100 companies. I've been very diversified in my companies. Some have been successful. Others have been just experiences. Notice I did not say failures. They were experiences. So I think that anyone who has a business needs to realize that, you know, I think this concept of mindset is very important.
Illinois Soul is a listener-supported service powered by Illinois Public Media, Urbana.
In February, Illinois Public Media launched Illinois Soul, a local non-commercial audio service to amplify Black music and voices.
Best mix of R&B and throwback jams, Foxy 106.9, bringing you that sunshine and take us with you wherever you go. Stream us, Foxy106.9.com.
Just 2 months before that, Michael Roberts launched his own radio station in his hometown of St. Louis. I asked him why it's important to start a radio station focused on Black communities at this time.
I sold my last hotel in Detroit, and I came in, and a friend of mine said there was an available license in St. Louis. And what we decided to do was, one, identify a product that is lacking in the community, and that's music from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, and early 2000s. Rap, if you will, you know, the LL Cool J kind of rap and stuff like that. Only hits of those years, so that anybody who's listening will be able to say at some point, that's my jam. We blend in, based on our African-American culture, we blend in at least once or twice an hour a gospel song. And we like to break the rules and play the blues, maybe one every hour. So people are listening, and they just don't know if it's getting ready to be Rick James, Michael Jackson, or Buddy Guy. They're just not sure. Or is it going to be the Mississippi Mass Choir? They don't know. But they're so busy locked in to our subculture music that they can't let go. And as a result, I'm finding that the larger, first of all, we are the only Black-owned radio station in town, number one. And the other thing that I noticed when I got started with it was that my jocks, my DJs, my radio hosts, etc., had all worked and become very successful at large white radio stations, and they'd all been fired. As the stations changed ownership, like in Radio 1, so did Odyssey. You know, Radio 1 would have had a lot of Black folks on it. Odyssey decided they were going to take that spectrum and they may bring in something like Patriot talk shows and completely different. I hired all of these very professional, established jocks who the community knew and loved and remembered. We went on the air in December. Suddenly, you know, there's the real JR back on the radio station. Tammy Hollins is back. We have the real breakfast crew in the mornings from 6 to 10, and Tony Roker, and all the different names all the way through and through the weekend. And then on Sunday mornings, we have gospel. So that when people get dressed for church, we're firing them up with upbeat gospel music during that time. Then we drop into jazz on a Sunday from noon to 3, and then we get into some real serious old school music on Sunday. So if you're sitting there with your grandma barbecuing in the backyard and she hears something, all she's going to do is say, hey, turn that up. I want to hear more of it. So it's what I would define as a metro broadcast station, because I don't need a signal that's going to go into the country and white suburbs. I need a strong signal that's going to drop right on top of the city and the African-American population. So we're not shy about it. And I will add that this is a political year, so there will be, you know, probably a considerable amount of opportunities with that.
You've been listening to my conversation with entrepreneur Michael Roberts. To learn more about the year-long Black Joy Project, click on IllinoisSoul.org. Coming up, remembrances are pouring in for Dr. William Patterson.
The utmost respect I have for him as a scholar, as a teacher, as a community activist, as a family man.
The University of Illinois' world-renowned Black Chorus nears a milestone.
This particular spring semester Black Chorus has really done a stellar job of preparing and basically understanding the assignment.
And we'll tell you about a big change coming to this show. Keep it here on Dialogue from Illinois Soul. Listening to Dialogue, a new weekly news magazine focused on the Black communities of Central Illinois. I'm Reginald Hardwick, News and Public Affairs Director at Illinois Public Media. The University of Illinois Black Chorus presented their annual Moms Day concert on April 13th at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana. Kimberly Schofield spoke with conductor and professor Dr. Ollie Watts Davis about those being honored at the concert and the impact Black Chorus has on our community.
The title is Mom Simply the Best, which makes me think of the Tina Turner song. You've had a lot of fun titles for your shows. Is that something that you come up with?
That is something that I come up with, the theme for the presentation. And you're absolutely correct. We will be paying tribute to the queen of rock and roll, Tina Turner. Additionally, we will be paying tribute to Harry Belafonte.
There's a lot with this concert, actually. It's the two-year celebration of the 55th year of Black Chorus. What does that mean to you? Because you've been there for, what, over 75% of it existing on the campus?
Well, I haven't done the percentage, but you're probably correct. Black Chorus was founded in 1968 by four students, and it has enjoyed a continual presence in this community. Rather than just having a one-year, 55-year celebration, I thought it would be unique and give others opportunity to enjoy the music and the continuation by having a two-year celebration. I'm also enjoying my 42nd year as the principal conductor. So it's really going to be a festive occasion at the Moms Day concert.
The celebration of mothers is such an important thing, especially in the Black community. What is it like for you and for your students to be performing and to have the theme revolved around Moms Day?
It's a wonderful opportunity and honor. The campus celebrates all the mothers, all the moms come to campus on a specifically designated weekend in the spring, as do the fathers come in the fall. So for Black Chorus to have an offering during this campus-wide celebration is really special. Yes, in the Black community, the mom is the foundation. So it's important for us to recognize all the contribution, the nurture, and just give her her dues, give her her flowers when she can receive them. And so we're especially pleased to have mothers of the graduating seniors recognized on the concert, and we'll be recognizing all the mothers in the audience as well.
Oh, that's beautiful. What a beautiful connection for the seniors and for their mothers. And this concert also will pay special tribute to the late Dr. William Patterson. Is that correct?
Yes, we plan to dedicate a specific piece in his honor. Dr. Patterson was a tremendous force in this community. We enjoyed some really fun conversations, sometimes challenging, but they always resulted in advancing the community and the youth in the community. So with his transition happening and it being right near our spring concert, I thought it only appropriate that we as Black Chorus pay our respects in this way musically.
Is there something that you're looking most forward to with this concert?
I'm looking forward to the entire offering. The students have worked so very hard and they're ready to deliver. It seems as if almost every year I'm rebuilding. I'm pleased to graduate a lot of students. That's why they come to the university. This particular spring semester Black Chorus has really done a stellar job of preparing and basically understanding the assignment. I oftentimes tell the students that whatever audience shows up, and we've been fortunate, we've had good audiences in the past, but they didn't earn that audience. The previous choir earned that audience. Mm-hmm. And so those people are coming because of the reputation and the standard of excellence that the previous choir was able to deliver. So I'm excited because, as I said earlier, I believe they understood the assignment. They put in the work, and on Saturday, we will give it away.
Dr. Davis, is there anything that you would like our listeners to know before the show on Saturday?
Listeners, I hope that you will find your way to Krannert Center on Saturday. The Black Chorus will present a real wide variety of music, starting with the spiritual, and then a hymn and an anthem. And then we'll go into a tribute section of popular music. And these young students have worked really hard to capture the essence and the power of these artists. We will have, on the second half of the concert, our traditional and contemporary gospel selections with tremendous audience participation. So we hope that you'll come with your singing voice. You can even bring your tambourine if you like and join us, because the highest evaluation of our presentation is our audience participation. So we bridge the gap from the stage to the audience. Alums will return to campus and you'll see them back on the stage. So if you're an alum in the community or wherever you are and you hear this, you are invited. Black Chorus is not only, you know, an academic offering and a musical organization, but it's a leadership institute as well. And so I take student leaders and alum leaders and kind of raise them up and give them opportunity to share their expertise. And so I'm just really delighted with that. You know, having been with this work for so long, it's important to me to prepare others either to continue this work here on this campus or wherever they go. That's what's important.
As Dr. Davis told Kimberly Schofield, the annual concert honored William Patterson. He passed away unexpectedly earlier this month, leaving a huge void in central Illinois. Patterson grew up in Urbana, attending STEM programs after school. When federal funding was cut for those programs, he became angry and without direction. 2 years after high school, he went to prison. But childhood friend Tracy Parsons says that's when Patterson began to turn his life around.
And he vowed, being in the jail cell, that he was going to be a difference maker.
Patterson eventually earned a PhD in education policy studies from the University of Illinois. Later, he brought a brightly colored, rehabilitated school bus called the Hip Hop Express to neighborhoods to teach children about careers in STEM using drones, race cars, and hip hop. Many of you left voicemail remembrances of Dr. P, as he was known. Let's listen to a few of them.
This is Barbara from Urbana. Who can find a more worthy man of valor whose price is far above rubies? Will Patterson is that man, a man of heart and love that reaches out to touch, encourage, inspire, and motivate multitudes, both young and senior. He was fervent in his care for his family and diligent in his efforts to uplift communities across the world. He believed that no one should be left behind. Knowing Dr. Patterson for decades and working beside him in various initiatives, he was never distracted nor deterred by the limited thoughts and imagination of others. I once read that almost always the creative, dedicated minority has made the world better. Dr. Will Patterson has left an indelible mark that has made the world better. His outstanding humanitarian works will one day praise him in the gates. I extend my sincerest condolences and prayers to the entire Patterson family and friends.
Hello, this is Jeff Williams. Dr. William Patterson was a great friend of mine. I've known him for 50 plus years. Most fondest memory is pretty much every time we cross each other's paths, we have great conversation, great laughs, great fun, talk about the future, what's going on in our personal lives right now, and things that we've done in our past and came out clean on the other side. Dr. Patterson, Mr. Reese, as we called him growing up, there'll never be another soul like his. I can truly attest to that. Again, I'm going to miss him dearly. Looking forward to celebrating his life because it's definitely a life worth celebrating.
This is James Tiger Corbin from Urbana, Illinois. And just leaving a positive message for my good friend, who I love like a brother, Dr. Will Patterson, who gave me opportunity when I first touched down in Champaign, and he saw past my disability and allowed me to be a part of something great at the time. It was called the Rap House. And that right there started me on my career path as I know it now of being a community builder. And if it wasn't for Will Patterson, I'm not sure where I would have been. Nobody would give me a chance or opportunity due to my background as well as my physical handicap. But Will saw past all that and allowed me to just be me. I thank you. I love you. My condolences to your family as well as all the anyone else you touched in this community. This is a great, great loss for all of us all.
Hi, this is Debbie from Urbana, and I'm calling to leave my message regarding Dr. Patterson, affectionately known by our family as Reese. My most recent memory of Dr. Patterson was him attending my brother's passing and being so not excited about the passing, but excited because my Uncle Billy, White Shoes Johnson, had returned back to town to attend my brother's funeral, and he later scheduled an interview with my uncle in the big, beautiful bus that he had. And my memory of him was he reverted back to that little boy that I knew because I've known him since I was about 5 years old, and he was so excited about seeing my uncle again. And this was a recent memory. This happened a couple of years ago. And it was just so good to see him so happy and so boyish-like, you know, and not so serious. And, you know, it was just wonderful to see him revert back to that little kid because he was excited about seeing my uncle. So I love him and his family so much, and I just wanted to leave this memory.
This is Eric McDuffie. I'm an associate professor of African American Studies and History, as well as the acting director for the Center for African Studies here at the University of Illinois. I am deeply saddened about the tragic news of Dr. William Patterson passing away. Dr. P was, words cannot describe the utmost respect I have for him as a scholar, as a teacher, as a community activist, as a family man, as a person who truly could speak truth to power and really truly connect with young people and people from all walks of life. And Dr. P was irreplaceable. He was an amazing man, a fantastic scholar, community activist. He will be missed.
Steve Jeffries, my dear pal, Will Patterson, my condolences to your family and your friends and anyone in the Champaign area. The brother was loved. The brother was a kind brother. We're going to miss you eternally. Love.
William Patterson loved science, and last Monday, learning about science reached new heights for many of us as we gazed into the sky for the solar eclipse as it passed over Illinois and much of the heartland. I've never seen a total eclipse, so I drove down to Carroll, Illinois, and with a few hundred of my friends, we viewed the moon covering the sun's light from Fort Defiance on the very southern tip of our state. Here's what it was like. This is Reginald Hardwick on the banks of the Mississippi River, and I am in Fort Defiance in the very southern tip of Illinois, and we're about 4 minutes away from totality, and it looks like a shadow has just been cast over us, and there are hundreds of people here lying on blankets, some have telescopes, they have families, and they all have their glasses, and we're all looking up. What are you seeing? What does it feel like?
I cannot describe it with words. It is the first time I see an astronomical event of this magnitude. For me, it's some sort of a connection between the human being and the universe. You know, it's very spiritual from my standpoint. I'm very excited. My heart is shaking. It's something that I would never regret have done.
It was great. It was great. It was better than 2017, actually.
Why do you say that?
Well, because to me, I could see the corona a lot better on this one than I could in 2017. So, and it was about a minute longer than I had last time. So it was wonderful. I didn't want to mess with the camera or the scope. I just wanted to look at it, you know, and just soak it in.
What do you think? Can I ask
that
you? What
amazing. You, that was absolutely amazing. So gorgeous.
So beautiful. It almost looked like there was a solar flare or something at the bottom.
I don't know.
It was beautiful.
We're questioning a solar flare, but we don't know. Yeah.
So glad to be able to be here and share it with everybody. It was awesome. Yeah.
So which was better, Benton or?
Actually, this one was better for us. It lasted longer, and the corona was... it was really vivid.
It was just really vivid. And it was just really bright on the edges.
It was so pretty. The sun was spread out on the edges.
It was beautiful.
From solar eclipse to cicadas, we're talking about the next natural event that will affect all of us next. And I'll have a special announcement as well. You're listening to Dialogue from Illinois Soul. You're listening to Dialogue, a new weekly news magazine focused on the Black communities of Central Illinois. I'm Reginald Hardwick. In our last segment, we talked about a scientific wonder in the Midwest, the total eclipse that passed over Illinois on April 8th. We're about a month away from another wonder, the emergence of trillions of cicadas. My colleague, Brian Mackey of the 21st Show, talked with Katie Dana, the scientific specialist in entomology at the Illinois Natural Science Survey.
We have a few ways to think about this. So when we talk about the periodical cicadas, that's just a group of cicadas. So some cicadas only spend a year underground, and some can take as long as 19 or 20 years. When they're underground, they feed on what's called xylem, a plant fluid out of plant roots. And so this is a really, really low nutrient food source for them. And it takes them a really long time to develop on it. They do have endosymbionts that help get those like missing amino acids from those plant juices. But you know, that could be one reason. Another reason is further towards the poles with colder temperatures, we tend to see some of our more longer lived species. And there's a theory out of Japan from Jin Yoshimura who said that it's their specific periodicity that was favored in times of low temperatures. So this may be something that we're seeing as a result of, you know, glacial periods with colder temperatures where it did take them much longer to come out. And they needed to synchronize their emergence. And so it took they took 17 years in the further north region for some of our broods. And then we see the 13-year broods further south.
Are the broods that are emerging in Illinois, I mean, how are those distinct from the ones that may be, you know, coming out in, say, Connecticut or New Jersey in the year 2030, for example?
So brood 13, it has a pretty small range compared to some of our other broods, but we know that it has some incredibly high numbers in northern Illinois. So that one is primarily northern Illinois. It does stretch into some of the surrounding counties as well. Then in the southern half of our state, you know, with brood 19, that one is what we call the Great Southern Brood. So that one stretches all the way to the East Coast, you know, goes down south and then over to the East Coast. And each of these two broods has a different set of species. So there's three species that we see with the 17-year cicadas and four species that we see with the 13-year cicadas. So, you know, even within, you know, the broods, like, it's also species that are emerging at the same time.
One of the things that I think is most distinct about cicadas is the sound they make, right? We have a little bit of tape of that. Let's take a listen. Okay. Hopefully that wasn't as painful to our listeners as it was in my headphones, but how do they do that? What is that sound we're hearing?
They use what we call the timbals. So they have these structures on the sides of their bodies. The males do, I should say. It's only the males. The females can't sing. And they use these to kind of buckle them. One analogy that I really liked was if you think of like a bendy straw, they use these to kind of like flex really, really, really fast in order to make that noise. So it's like kind of like it looks like a drum, but it flexes. And that's how they generally create that noise. Whereas like if you think of other insects, oftentimes they're using like their legs or their wings to rub them together to make noises. But cicadas have like specific structures that they're using. And what makes them really loud is that, you know, in addition to these structures, which are bending and flexing and buckling, they have like almost an entirely empty body cavity to kind of amplify that noise and make it so, so loud.
What are some of the visual tells of a cicada? Because this is also interesting, right? We're going to be seeing a lot of visual evidence of the cicada this summer.
Yes, absolutely. So you will be seeing holes in the ground. That's one of the first things that you'll start to notice when this brood emergence is they actually start to burrow, but they don't come out yet. They're trying to wait for that perfect soil temperature. And I like to think of it as like they're aerating your lawn, right? It's great. Creating holes all over your yard. And so that's one of the first lines of evidence that we'll see. And once they come out of the ground, they usually do it at night, but you'll see some during the day as well. They'll shed their shells, right? They'll molt. So they'll come out of those shells and they'll leave them all over tree branches. You know, you see them everywhere, you know, like on park signs. Trying to think, there's been some really interesting places. Oh, I found one molted on my car tire one time. With a lot of cicada species, we don't usually see them until they're dead. But these guys, we're going to see everywhere. And the periodical cicadas are very distinctive compared to many of the other cicada species we might be familiar with because they are black and orange and have red eyes. And so they're very colorful, which usually
they are freaky looking. Yes.
Yeah. And usually for an entomologist, that means that they're poisonous, right? We get those aposomatic colorations that we think of with, you know, like poison dart frogs where, you know, it's like kind of an indicator like, oh, don't eat me. I am definitely poisonous, but these are not poisonous.
So
Since the launch of Illinois Soul, we have been committed to this show, a weekly dialogue with you about the people and issues that impact Black communities in Central Illinois. It's been my honor to get this show started, but soon a new voice and producer will take over. Her name is Kennedy Vincent, and she joins me in studio now. Welcome to Dialogue in Illinois Public Media, Kennedy.
Thank you, Reginald.
For those of you who may have heard her name before, she was a producer working remotely in Las Vegas on our weekday talk show, The 21st Show. But she's relocated here to Champaign-Urbana and has been talking with folks ever since. First, what do you think about Central Illinois?
I love Central Illinois. It's a beautiful place. I love seeing all the fresh flowers blooming. Spring's a very beautiful time. Everyone's really kind and just open and welcoming, and it's honestly been a pleasure and an honor to get to know the members of the community so far, and I just love the weather. I love the little squirrels running everywhere.
You grew up in the Southwest, but have some Midwest roots. Tell me about that.
I do. My mom is originally from Wisconsin, so childhood was really amazing to travel back there during the summers. We'd go ATV riding and fresh berry picking and go to the Madison Farmers Market. It was a really beautiful time. And my father is also from Trinidad and Tobago, so I spent a few years when I was younger growing up overseas as well in the islands.
What got you interested in working in the field of news and public media?
At first, I was really interested in marketing, and I didn't realize how much you could do in marketing. Then I realized how much I enjoyed the arts and creating different things. And I got into photography and film. And then that really translated into journalism and storytelling. So it was until I got to college, I realized that I enjoyed radio a lot. And I enjoyed that broadcast aspect. So it was fun to be able to learn that in school. And then eventually that carried on to an internship in Northern Nevada with a NPR affiliate radio station out there. And now here I am with WILL in Illinois Soul.
What attracted you to the Dialogue show and Illinois Soul?
Being able to be a voice in the community and being able to uplift others around me. All of our voices and all of our stories deserve to be heard, and we are allowed to share our lived experiences. And I think creating a platform that is specifically for us is so important, and every community needs it. So really being able to come on board with a team who has that same vision and mindset of setting a goal and a standard of, you know, we can do this too and we belong. We're innovators, we're visionaries. And again, being able to create that, help create that platform here in Champaign-Urbana, it's really important to me as well.
What do you hope to do with the show?
What I hope for Dialogue is to really have deeper conversations with community members, whether it's about uplifting the youth or music or news and culture and food. Again, we really want to create this safe space for our voices and being able to connect with other members of our community. And also having this platform allows others to listen to our stories, which is important. Because, again, we deserve to be heard. Dialogue is really about elevating our community, but it's also about integration and inclusivity.
You're also a specialty reporter for Illinois Public Media News covering Black and immigrant communities. Why is that role important, and what do you hope to cover?
The role is important personally for me because my dad was an immigrant. So when he came to America, you know, he faced a lot of challenges, and I hear a lot about what my grandmother and father and uncles had to go through when they first came to America. So I have that personal connection. But also when I was raised overseas, I was able to connect with other communities out there. Trinidad and Tobago has a really huge Indian and Asian population. So when I came to America, I didn't necessarily knew where I fit in when I moved back to America at a young age. So I made friends with everybody. I was friends with people in the Latino community, Asian community, you know, learning about everybody's food and cultures and music. So especially now moving to Champaign-Urbana, it's important that we talk about how much the communities are growing here. You see it on the U of I, but you also see it off of campus. So on Dialogue, we want to create a space where we're also giving people who are moving here, who are not originally from here, a voice and being able to share what's going on in their communities, maybe some of the challenges and struggles and resources. So we want to be that hub for others to listen to and connect and tune in.
What's something that you think is misunderstood between Black Americans born, raised here, and people who are Black who come from other parts of the diaspora?
When you're coming from a country outside of America, you're not a minority. When you come to America, you're seen as a minority. And minority doesn't mean you're less than. It just means that there's not as many of you, but that doesn't mean you're less important. But at times, what we see happening in America is our voices are not being heard, and there's not platforms being built to talk about what's going on in our communities. And I think that's one of the differences, where it's a mentality shift of how you experience life overseas versus when you're coming to America as a Black person.
Especially if you come from a Black country, right?
Exactly.
Have you encountered challenges being a Black woman journalist?
I have. It's all about how you view the challenge, because there's always going to be a challenge, especially being a Black woman. But resiliency is in our DNA. And just knowing that no matter what room you step into, you're valuable, you're a gift, you're an asset, you're beautiful, you're talented. I know that we can rise no matter what.
What do you like to do outside of working in the newsroom and reporting?
Yes, I love cooking. I love being creative. I grew up dancing. So anytime I'm able to find a different outlet for myself and create, that's extremely important to me. Nature is also important to me. I love hiking and running and watching a good sunset, you know, just being able to ground yourself and look at the grass and you know, be one with the elements sometimes. It's very peaceful.
What's a favorite dish that you like to cook? Anything from Trinidad and Tobago?
Ooh, I love making curry. I love making bake, which is what we call it. It's a local bread. It's just a very easy recipe. If you're familiar with the West Indies, you know that Trinidad is known for our doubles. It's a street food. So one day I will attempt to make doubles, but for right now it's just curry and stew chicken.
How can people get a hold of you?
People can get a hold of me by emailing me at kwv3@illinois.edu.
Well, Kennedy, we are thankful you joined the team here, and we're really looking forward to the upcoming shows.
Thank you, Reginald. Tune into Dialogue in Illinois Soul.
And Kennedy Vincent will be taking over as host and producer of Dialogue starting next week. And you can hear Dialogue every Saturday at 11 a.m. and Tuesday at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul FM 101.1 and on WILL AM 580 Wednesdays at 8 p.m. And I'll still be around. You may even hear me do a story or an interview from time to time. Our music was composed by Lamont Holden. I'm Reginald Hardwick. Dialogue and Illinois Soul are brought to you by Illinois Public Media, which is a service of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Please join us again next week.